Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 27th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, the chair of the House Ag Committee says he just might link the National Animal ID System and the slow-moving mandatory country of origin labeling legislation together. The big three automakers have pledged to make half their models flex fuel by 2012, and a new federal withholding tax could put a real crimp into the farmer's back pocket. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and a discussion I had with a Purdue Ag economist about the gross receipts tax. Indiana had it and killed it. Illinois is looking to put it into place. Oh, and then just after the bottom of the hour, don't forget that meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, so you ought to stay with us for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Would you like to TiVo our agricultural broadcasts? You can do so with AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. Listen to all our shows at your convenience. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the red podcast link in the right navigation window. Follow the simple instructions and subscribe to the shows of your choice, the pre-opening, opening, and closing market reports, and Commodity Week. AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. It's your marketing advantage.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May soft red winter wheat at $4.54, down 4 cents for the day. July futures were off 2.25, and the Septembers were down 2.5. The July at 4.68, the Septembers at 4.78.5. May corn futures at 3.92.5 were up 1.5. July futures up 0.25 at 4.03.75. December at 4.01.25, up 0.25, and the rest of the pit managed to lose for the 08 contracts. May beans at 7.57, we're down 1.5. July at 1.75 lower at 7.73. And November's at 7.99 3/4, we're down 1.5 for the day. May bean meal at 2.14.20, down 1.10. May bean oil at 31.81. That was up 14 for the day. And the March contract off 22.5 cents in the feeder cattle pit over at the Mercantile Exchange settled at $105.10 a hundredweight. April live cattle at 96.82.5, we're down 1.22.5. June futures off $1.77.5 today at $93.35. April lean hogs down 42.5 cents at 37.5. From the outside markets, crude oil May futures $63 even on their last trade. They were 9 cents higher. The high price for the day, by the way, at 63.05. The CRB index at 311.82. That's off 45 for the day. The dollar at 82.99 is down 0.09. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now down just about 61 points at 12,408.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Tuesday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
No, let's start with the Mercantile Exchange this afternoon because there were some pretty good losses in the cattle pit. The June contract down $1.77.5. The Aprils were off $1.22.5. For the live cattle for the day, August futures were down, October as well. Lean hogs were off. What was happening there at the Merc?
Well, we've seen quite a bit of setback, and since we were head dollar cattle here just about 3 weeks ago, Todd, we've seemed to back off. The product has not been moving well. I know that the box beef trade was down yesterday, and we continue to see a little bit of profit taking over there in fund liquidation. So, all in all, we've got quite a few hogs. We've got the hogs report here later this week, and, some numbers looking at that. We're looking at, some increases, I think, around the 102 level on that for coming up on that. So just a lot of pork out there, a lot of beef, and just a lot of unenthusiasm until we get this report over and see what these corn prices are going to do.
Yeah, it has had an impact across both the grains floors and the livestock floor over at the Mercantile Exchange. Futures today managed to rebound just a bit in the corn pit after a pretty rough day yesterday, although there was a spread between the nearby contracts up to the December 007, and the 08s were all lower for the afternoon. What happened there?
Well, it's been so much the other way around all week. I think we saw a little bit of buying by the commercials in the old crop there today. I think FEMAT was the big buyer in there that way. You know, at noon, the Midwest weather maps were a little bit wetter through Saturday and next week. Looks to cool off. I think if you watch Skilling there at noon, well, he was talking about quite a cool down for next week going into things, and then the 11 to 15 day maps are hitting a little more normal as far as that goes. So, we did see a little bit of commercial buying, very light commercial buying. I mean, as far as anything, nothing coming in, it was more picking up offers than it was just being aggressive that way.
Yeah, I was reading, speaking of the weather, I was reading Mike Tenora's programming content for Ag. He has a business called T-Storm at T-Storm. I think it's t-storm.com. And we get some of that information. And Mike was looking at the same thing that Skilling is, and he saw some numbers that were pretty cold out 10 days, though he wasn't sure it was going to happen. That's a pretty long ways out, but those numbers were in, for the upper Midwest, I think, down as low as the 20s. A lot of Arctic air still hanging around pretty low in Canada at this point. So
that sounds like quite a difference. We were about 78 degrees outside just before the show here. I just went and looked at the indoor-outdoor thermometer. So that would be quite a change that way. And of course, Todd, we all know we're looking towards the big report on Friday. The average guess, 8.1 million acres of corn, 88.1 million acres of corn, 69.2 million acres of beans. So, those are the average guesses. That's supposedly what the numbers we're trading here at. Like I say, I think if we are below the 69 million acres in beans, I think that's positive. The beans, and if we're above the 89 in the corn, well, I think that's a little bit negative towards the corn. So that way. The big number, though, that I'm going to be keeping an eye on is the March 1st stocks.
Mm-hmm.
The average guess is 6023 and 1801 for the beans. And the number above that 6,000 million bushels would be sort of bearish the old crop corn. Because of, that would be a decrease in feed usage is where we think it would come from, and some rationing that happened there, and that would keep our carryout up pretty good for old crop corn. So that's one that's going to be watched very closely, just about as much as a million or 2 acres in the planting intentions can shift a lot easier than those stocks can, and the stocks would be there. So that's one of the numbers we're going to be keeping an eye on and seeing if it is above that number we were looking at.
I know that you sign up crop insurance. Is there much whisper in the risk management side of this thing about how many acres got signed up and what that might mean for the crop acreage on Friday of this week? Was there a big push, do you think, in your clientele to insure more corn acres?
Well, that's the funny thing, Todd. We insure corn by county. We don't insure it by acres until we have our planting report. So, we did see quite a few people taking the higher levels of crop insurance in their corn, but we don't know what for sure their intentions are going to be. Those will have to come when they do their planting report. So what you do is you sign up for an insurance level or all the corn that you plant in that county at the same program.
I knew you signed up for a level. I did not know you didn't sign up acreage to begin with.
No, because we don't know what the spring is going to be. So we sign up every acre in that county at that level.
So you don't have an idea any better idea than anybody else.
The idea is, and I will tell you this, because we do talk to our customers as we're signing this up, we're going to have a slight increase in corn, but nowhere near the 10% that they're talking about in other areas. I think Indiana is going to lag behind and stay with the rotation a lot more because of the heavily no-till. And when we got $8 beans and they got some of the other varieties of coming in that they're paying the premiums for, so with the oil contents and like that, getting them up 60 cents over the regular price, we've got a lot of people that are staying with beans over here.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you, Todd.
And that's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. Taking a look at the weather forecast, as our own Ed Kieser put it forth for this afternoon and this evening. He says tonight, mostly cloudy skies, a little widespread shower, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range from 43 in the Chicago area to around 60 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, cloudy skies, showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs will range from 48 near Lake Michigan to 76 in the far southern part of Illinois. Tomorrow, the wind speeds range from 10 to 20 miles an hour. The extended forecast for Illinois and Indiana, the highlights, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms will occur from time to time over the coming week. At this point, the greatest coverage, says Ed, will be expected tonight through tomorrow, Friday evening into Saturday, and next Monday afternoon into Tuesday. The rainfall over the coming week will be enough to keep moist fields wet and make access difficult. Temperatures will turn a bit cooler, but they'll remain above average tomorrow and into the weekend. Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News. At the bottom of the hour, Don Day will join us for the weather forecast.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says he has interest in linking the long-delayed mandatory country of origin labeling law for meats and produce to the slow-moving implementation of a national livestock ID system with an eye to getting both up and running. Peterson says tying the two programs together could win support for both, but Peterson adds country of origin labeling is already law that has been delayed too long. In Peterson's words, it will not be delayed anymore. We are going to figure out how to implement it. Leaders of the Big Three automakers yesterday urged President Bush to help make alternative fuels more available to American drivers. The Big Three automakers pledged to make half of their cars flex fuel compatible by 2012. But the chief executive officers of Ford Motors, General Motors, and Daimler Chrysler AG did not endorse improved fuel economy standards, which the president and Congress hope to increase by 4% a year. The White House hopes an overhaul of fuel economy standards can cut gasoline consumption by up to 8.5 billion gallons a year by 2017. If a newly mandated withholding tax goes into effect, farmers and ranchers would receive less of their government payments. Tracy Grandin is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
A congressional mandated withholding tax could spell real trouble for farmers and ranchers who receive some government payments.
This is withholding on the total payment. Taxes are only due on the net. So many farmers and ranchers won't owe that tax at all. It's like the government is withholding 3% of your paycheck with no interest for up to a year.
American Farm Bureau Senior Director of Congressional Relations Pat Wolf says Farm Bureau is supporting congressional legislation to repeal the tax.
Farm Bureau is working to repeal the 3% tax. Legislation's been introduced in the House to do that. The hunt is on for co-sponsors of the legislation. The bill number is H.R. 1023. It's been introduced by a bipartisan team.
Wolf says the withholding tax needs to be repealed before its 2011 enactment date.
The budget is tight, and there's already rumors that people will start to move the effective date forward to pay for other programs. So our goal is to repeal this tax and under no circumstances allow it to become effective earlier than it's supposed to be.
Tracy Grandin, Washington.
A measure passed in the Iowa Senate would require large meat packers to buy at least 25% of their hogs on the spot market from independent producers. Bill sponsors say the bill is needed to sustain some competition in a swine market dominated by a few large meat packers. Senate President Jack Kibbe.
On the day we passed this bill, there was 11% of the kill that day was on a negotiated sales process. We killed 430,000 head of pigs that day in the nation. 126,000 of them were Iowa pigs, and there was only 11% of those Iowa pigs that were on a negotiated process.
Kibbe says 11% is just too low.
And the pork producers themselves, at their national convention in Denver, said we should never let that figure get below 15% because the contract price is based on the spot market price. So, to me, it's a very important bill for rural Iowa. It's a small step in the right direction.
Large packers Tyson Foods and Smithfield Foods oppose the legislation, which now goes to the Iowa House for consideration. A new release from the National Corn Growers Association says the most common form of conservation tillage is now no-till, which now accounts for about 20% of all corn acres in the survey area. NCGA officials say yields from no-till have been increasing with better hybrids and methods of weed control. And the president of the Argentine Wheat Growers Association says wheat plantings could be down 10% to 20% for the 2007-08 growing season. Sean Carman says government intervention and increased fertilizer costs of 30% to 35% is discouraging Argentina wheat producers to plant as much wheat as last year. Carman says new crop wheat production could drop to 11 million metric tons from 14 million metric tons a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. It's at willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of things, including most of the daily ag programming. The pre-opening, opening, and closing market reports, along with Commodity Week, can all be downloaded directly as MP3 files, or you can sign up to get them put on your computer directly via a podcast. It's right there at willag.org. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter, and that you can hear some of the other ag programming there on the website as well, including the Midday Report with Sue Martin. It's all at willag.org. Well, up next, you know, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says the internet could possibly provide an information overload.
It's predicted that the internet will contain 200 million websites by 2010. 70% of Americans use the internet. There's no question that we have greater access to more information than ever before. But how much of that information is trustworthy? There's a saying that everyone is entitled to his own opinion, but not his own facts. Problem is, there are a lot of opinions out there presented as facts. With the exponential growth in the sources of information, those false facts can spread like wildfire. There's also a joke, it was on the internet, so it must be true. On the internet, anyone can claim to be an expert. Since few websites have fact checkers, and since we can't always depend on the news media to get it right either, our job as information consumers is to question the veracity of the information or misinformation that constantly streams our way. For example, a paper out by Environment California entitled Overkill, Why Pesticide Spraying for West Nile Virus in California May Cause Harm Than Good. Says pesticides approved for mosquito control include compounds known to have serious human health impacts. Well, that's correct, if you take a bath in the stuff. What the paper doesn't mention is that all pesticides have safe Environmental Protection Agency approved application rates, and they would have to be applied at several times those rates to have serious human health impacts. The report is filed with claims that pesticides may do this and could do that. Convincing? To anyone with a basic understanding of pesticides, hardly. To the average reader, likely. To be a wise information consumer in this information age, one must be a critical thinker. Ask questions like, who says? How did they come to that conclusion? What are they not telling me? And what is the opposing view? The answers can help distinguish between facts and someone's 2 cents worth. Do they use words like may, could, or some? These are signs that you need to look further for the facts. Ironically, in this day, even more information is more readily available than ever. The individual burden to research an issue to get at the truth also is greater. Consider the message, consider the source, and look for the facts. Be a critical thinker and avoid misinformation overload. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call at 217-333-0855. 1-800-259-9150. Well, one subject that seems to be getting a whole lot of views lately from the state of Illinois is Governor Blagojevich's proposed gross receipts tax. We wonder just a little bit more about that tax and what kind of impact it might have on farm country. Of course, the Farm Bureau and the state of Illinois, along with the Illinois Grain and Feed Association, are opposed to the tax. As it happens, our neighbors to the east, Indiana, used to have the gross receipts tax. We decided that might be a good place to start, so we called and talked with Larry DeBoer, ag economist from Purdue University, about the gross receipts tax. Started out by asking him just why Indiana had gotten rid of that tax.
They got rid of it because, for one thing, we thought we were way behind the times in still having it. My impression was that that had been a tax that had been created in the days when it was just easier to do the accounting on gross receipts, and it's kind of invented during, at least in Indiana, during the Great Depression, when we were first moving into income taxes, and that seemed to be the easiest thing to do. And we had gotten rid of the thing individual income tax perspective in the early 60s, and had started to try to get rid of the corporate version of the thing in the mid-1970s. Because we wanted the money, we didn't phase it out, and finally they got rid of it, and we thought, well, now we're at least consistent with modern public finance, and now we find that we are so far behind the times that everybody else seems to be looking to reenact the thing. So that's one reason. But the main argument that was against the gross receipts tax was that it taxes corporations whether they're making profits or not. So I suppose that's where the application to agriculture might come in. And the concern in Indiana was that if we want to try to attract new firms, and especially new high-tech firms, that might lose money for the first several years, we'd hit them with this gross receipts tax because they'd be getting revenue. We'd tax them with a corporate income tax even though they were making losses. And we thought that would discourage location in Indiana, especially since hardly anybody else had anything like the gross receipts tax that we had. So there's a long campaign by the corporate sector to get rid of it, and in 2002 they finally succeeded. Another thing that we knew was going on was that when we were in line to try to attract a firm to Indiana, other states would point to our gross receipts tax and say, well, you don't want to locate there because even if you lose money, Indiana will tax you. And I think it probably raised a red flag and may have discouraged economic development in Indiana.
That was Larry DeBoer, Purdue University ag economist, discussing the gross receipts tax in Indiana as it was first enabled and eventually lifted. Of course, Governor Rod Blagojevich of the state of Illinois has proposed a gross receipts tax for this state. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A Nobel laureate from the University of Illinois has died. The university says Paul Lauterbur died of kidney disease this morning at his home in Urbana. Lauterbur won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 2003, along with British researcher Sir Peter Mansfield, for their work in developing magnetic resource imaging in the 1970s. MRI units are now a staple in hospitals around the world. Lauterbur had been a professor in the U of I's College of Medicine since 1985. Paul Lauterbur was 77 years old. One of the three people who were found shot to death in and around a Danville duplex last weekend was a convicted murderer. The State Department of Corrections says 30-year-old Rodney Pepper had been paroled in 2003, 10 years after he was sentenced for a murder and armed robbery in Chicago. Pepper's body was found outside a duplex on Danville's east side Sunday morning. Inside, police found the bodies of 21-year-old Tabrian McCullough and 19-year-old Madison Leverins. Police say all three had been shot. They've made no arrests in the case. The maker of Vioxx has gotten a favorable verdict in the Midwest's first trial over the once blockbuster painkiller. Jurors in Madison County, Illinois, cleared Merck in the 2003 deadly heart attack of a 52-year-old woman. The pharmaceutical company had argued that Patty Schwaller's weight and other health issues might have posed risks that better explain her collapse and sudden death. The widower of Schwaller, who had taken Vioxx for about 20 months, had claimed that Vioxx contributed to his wife's death and that Merck failed to sufficiently warn consumers that the drug increased the risk of cardiovascular problems. More than 1,000 people showed their support at the Indiana State House today for a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage in the state. The rally was sponsored by the conservative group Advance America. The amendment is being considered in a House committee. U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez appeared in Chicago today with U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. The two are promoting a program aimed at online sexual predators. Word got out earlier this month that Fitzgerald's job performance was ranked as not distinguished by a former aide to Gonzalez who's at the center of a blow-up over the firings of federal prosecutors. Justice Department officials have since called Fitzgerald one of the most well-respected prosecutors. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL AM 580. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us now to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about that little bit of cold air that might be hanging around out there, or maybe a week, week and a half away. What's it look like?
Well, it certainly looks like winter going to go down fighting and kicking and screaming. While we are going to be actually pretty mild for the rest of this week and into the weekend, colder weather is going to slide out of central Canada into the Midwest and the Great Lakes, bringing temperatures down below normal, especially as we get on into, let's say, after Tuesday of next week. There's going to be a pretty good chill descending across the Midwest during that time frame.
Enough to hurt the growing wheat crop out west?
Well, it looks like the direction of the real cold air may scoot around to the north and east of that area. It looks like the direction of the cold air may stay just north and east of there. So it may be a glancing blow, but not a direct hit. So they may, the way it looks now, escape it.
Has the spring wheat come out of dormancy to the north of us? Would it be in danger?
Well, that is definitely a concern. I would say that those crops in northern Iowa, Minnesota, the Dakotas, northeastern Nebraska, Wisconsin, and northwestern areas of Illinois, most susceptible to the possible of some hard freeze conditions.
And tell me about the rainfall for the next few days here in the Midwest.
Well, there's going to be quite a storm. In fact, it will probably be making headlines here in the next couple of days. Storm sitting out of, spinning out of the central Rockies and heading into the Plain States. Now, initially, I think the heaviest moisture will be found across the southern Plain States, winter wheat country, and into the central and northern Rockies and the northern Plain areas. This system, though, will spread rain, especially as we get ourselves into the into the western areas of the Corn Belt. But all of the Midwest should see beneficial rains, although I think the western areas, Iowa, eastern Nebraska, eastern Kansas, and Missouri will probably see the heavier moisture.
We've done the west, the north, and the Midwest. We probably better check in on the Delta region, see how things are going for their planting season.
They're going to see some moisture. There's going to be quite a boundary of shower and thunderstorm activity developing in that area, especially over the weekend and into early next week. So they will be seeing some rainfall down there. I think the colder weather will need to keep a watch on that, but I think most of that will go to the north.
Don, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons. Remember, you can hear what Don had to say, along with the words and wisdom of Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities anytime you'd like right there on our website. Just visit WILLAG.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.